Well, good morning. Thank you for joining us here on Community Talk. I'm Dottie Chase, and we have one of my favorite ladies to talk to in the studio today. It's Dr. V. Hill from Animal Welfare Department. How are you doing today?
Really great. How are you, Dottie? It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. I always like talking to you. We always talk of kitten season.
Yes.
So kitten season is coming up. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a lot of the cool advancements that have been going on over there at the Animal Welfare Shelter with Danny Navarro. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having us.
Well, we're happy to have you here, too. So we want to talk to you in a bit about all the different accomplishments that are going on over there at Animal Welfare. It's always changing. You know, you guys are always working to advance not only the care for animals, but just the facility itself and the number of adoptions that go out. But we'll start with Dr. V. Hill, because you're so fun. And you've come today to warn us all about ringworm.
Right, and try and recruit you to come with me to hang out with it.
All right. Well, that would also be fun, too, because you guys need volunteers. And listen to this fun. You guys are fun. It's a fun place to be, not only with the animals, but, of course, the people there, too. So
it is great. And it's a place where we save lives.
You do save lives. Yeah. Half my family, at least, maybe. More than half comes from your shelter.
Mine too.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear it. Well, what would you like to talk about? Because I know that you have the ringworm clinic coming up, but this is cat season, and so why are we concerned about that right now?
Well, here we are, Donnie, at the beginning of kitten season, which sounds like a party, but isn't. It's not.
I didn't think it sounded like a party.
It sounds fabulous, but with it come a lot of little cute furry babies in need of homes.
Uh-huh.
And so we know that this time of year we're ramping up, getting ready for that. And along with that kitten rush, we see a rise in certain types of illnesses in our population and in the population of the community, our animals. And one of the things that we see commonly is ringworm, which sounds really like some sort of funny parasite, but it's not. It's actually a fungal infection.
Okay.
You can think of it like athlete's foot. A little different, but similar.
Okay.
Fungal infection that likes to get on kittens. And so in the past, this was something that couldn't be treated in a shelter because it can spread. It can actually infect other kitties, sometimes dogs, and sometimes even people. So we had to be very careful about it. Sadly, that meant that these tiny little balls of fur were euthanized.
Oh, no.
And that was heartbreaking.
Yeah,
and, you know, all of us there at Animal Welfare thought, you know, this is just not acceptable. There has to be something we can do. So we found a spot in our facility that we turned into an isolation ward specifically for ringworm kittens. And in that ward, we save lives by bringing in wonderful volunteers who help us, believe it or not, bathe these kitties.
Oh, boy. All the volunteer jobs.
Sounds like fun. So it is fun, believe it or not. And it makes the most well-rounded, sweetest animals when they've gone through treatment like this because they're so used to being handled.
Oh, good.
Part of the mainstay of this treatment is actually bathing away that fungus. And so we use a special shampoo and we treat the kittens twice a week. And that's where our volunteers come in. They are the ones who are the lifeblood of this facility. They bathe our kitties and we have these wonderful photographs that, you know, we've taken just recently and throughout the course of the last year and a half of these amazing women who are bathing cats.
Yeah, I mean, they really are amazing women. And if you know anything about a cat does not like water, does not like a bath. But these cats that have been treated here, you show this one that's being treated, and then actually her picture and another one down there at the bottom, they look so happy and healthy.
Yes.
You know, that's a big thing, too.
Yes.
So you spot the ringworm, actually, you can see it. It's
you
not
can
like.
See it. Yeah. It's basically a bald spot. And
oh,
so
is
not
it?
All bald spots are ringworm. I don't want everybody to get afraid, but, you know, it is
There's
a specific,
lot of men out there listening
yes.
that just freaked out.
We don't want to scare anybody. But in these little kittens, we'll see this sort of pattern of baldness, and we do some special tests that help us determine that it is indeed ringworm.
Okay.
And if those tests come back positive, that's when we know they've got to spend some time in that facility. And they spend anywhere from 2 to 4 months with us getting those lovely baths and lots of love because they're in isolation, an important part of our volunteer's job is loving them, giving them lots of attention because they can't go out and be adopted yet.
Yeah.
So that's the cool part of their job as well.
That is a cool part of the job. And then also, like you just mentioned a bit earlier, you're socializing the animal.
Yeah.
And with cats, it seems so easy for them, especially young ones, to slip into that feral stage.
Yeah.
And so these volunteers are definitely working to get them more to the domestic side, right?
They're amazing. They're working magic. These
yeah.
kitties come out of here so loving. And there's, you know, they just took pictures last week. They put them all in bow ties.
I saw that.
And had
that's
them, you know,
nice.
Do a photo shoot. And these kittens are totally excited about it. Yeah, and totally sweet. It's amazing the work that they put in and the amazing cats that come out of this facility.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. So how many cats do you think you have in the ringworm quarantine area right now?
So it varies. Right now, we're kind of at the low spot because the winter is not kitten season, so we don't see as many.
Yeah.
So right now, we're dealing with about 6 kitties in the ringworm facility.
Well, that's not bad at all.
No, it's not bad at all. It's a good time of year. Now, we have gotten up to 20 and 25 when the season has become at its peak. Usually, that's litters because, remember, kittens sometimes come in groups. Yes, if one has gotten exposed, we want to treat everybody just so we make sure we keep the community safe.
Sure.
And so that means we have a big bunch of babies right there in that ringworm facility getting that care.
How many volunteers do you think you need? Do you want to just keep a lot on staff?
Well, we love the ones we have, but we need probably twice the amount. Right now, we are relying on 4 wonderful volunteers who are taking care of this place 7 days a week.
They're
helping us with feeding and cleaning and bathing and loving.
So they're running that place.
They are making an amazing difference, but we need more help. And they're tired. They're wonderful women, but
they're
tired.
Yeah.
And so we're hoping that the community might embrace this idea with us a little bit and help us save these lives. And the important thing to remember is they were euthanized. If this facility wasn't there, we wouldn't be able to save these kittens. And right now we're at about 400 lives that we've saved over a year and a half.
That, wow.
Cool.
Because you have it, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yep.
I mean, it just goes to show the amount of animals that kind of come through your place. Mm-hmm. But so, are you saying 400 had ringworm and you treated?
Yes.
So then that would have been 400 cats that died.
That would have lost their lives
that
for
was
a fungal infection,
yeah.
for athlete's foot.
Oh, I mean, when you really put it like that, it's like, you know.
It's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. And I think everybody in this room values the life of animals.
Yes.
You know, we find that sharing our planet with them is a very important thing to do.
Yes.
Did the 400 get adopted?
Oh, yes. They all,
okay.
we track them. They're in homes and happy and living happy lives with wonderful families.
Well, Dr. Veal, that is amazing. And that's very nice that you do that. I mean, you're overwhelmed as it is. So that's kind of cool. What would somebody do if they wanted to volunteer specifically in the Ringworm Clinic?
Well, there's a couple ways they can get a hold of us. They can actually call or stop by the Eastside Clinic that's there at 8920 Lomas Boulevard Northeast. They can call the clinic at 764-1151. Or they can even contact our clinic manager either through 311 or through her email address, which is kkehlerkkaler@cabq.gov. And she'll help get them pointed in the right direction. She's our volunteer coordinator over in the clinic.
All right, cool. And we'll go over those phone numbers and then also that email at the end of this interview. But also just is it #311 that you dial, or do you just dial 311?
Just 311.
Just 311.
Yep.
Forget about the
right through. Yeah.
Pound
yeah.
or hashtag. However you refer
yes,
to
yes, right, yeah. The trendy
so,
way to say it.
Yeah, yeah. But just 311 to call that and get that wonderful service that we have here in Albuquerque, especially when it comes to animal welfare. I've had to call them a couple of times just to ask questions, and they're very knowledgeable folks
they're
over there.
They're very helpful,
especially
yeah.
in you know, with what you guys do and what the rest of the city does, too. Now, also, we want to talk to Danny, because you have been – did you take over? What is your job there?
So I'm the director of the animal welfare department.
Okay. So that's what I was thinking. Yes.
And so, here's what I'll tell you.
Okay.
You know, I've been there about a year now, and every day I continue to just learn something new.
Yeah.
Even as recent as today, as a matter of fact, just a few minutes ago. And I think what I've learned now is don't ever let Dr. Veal go before me.
Because, he will learn, right?
Yeah.
He'll learn. Yeah.
Maybe.
That's a really hard act to follow. You
it's
know what I mean?
Tremendous.
And now I'm feeling all this pressure. And, you know, it's only my second time on radio. So, you know, as a matter of fact, Dr. Veal, you're not invited next time.
We have to have Dr.
Veal. I know,
too much, I know.
But, you know.
No.
Yeah.
That's a needed thing around here.
No, she's the best.
She is absolutely.
She's
Well, because you give your heart to this place, you know?
I love it. Very
yeah,
much.
And you do too, Danny.
It's so hard not to, you know, when you get here. And, you know, I wasn't in the sheltering world walking in as the director here. But, you know, I mean, unquestionably, my heart is with this department. This is where I want to, you know, complete my career with the city. But, you know, to talk about a few of the accomplishments that we've had, you know, when I came in, you know, things were kind of in a dismal state. I mean, we had a 40% vacancy in the field for our officers. But when you look at the people that were out on injury, I think it was even more than that.
Wow.
And so at one point we literally had 6 officers for 24/7, 365. For the entire city of Albuquerque.
Ooh, that is not good at all.
It's not good at all. And the other thing is that 311, you know, if you look at the numbers, calls about animals in the community, it's the number one call driver for 311.
Is it really?
Yeah. So for 6 people to be trying to do that, it was horrendous, honestly. So there was about 2,300 call backlog. And that backlog went back as far as 2 years. So in certain cases, literally, if someone called and said, hey, there's, you know, nothing dangerous, but a stray animal in front of my house, you know, it could be 2 years before we show up and go, oh, well, I guess it's not here anymore. You know,
oh my
so,
gosh.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it wasn't a good situation.
And what a waste of resources, too. I mean, just send that officer to a call that's 2 years old.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, on top of that, our priority one response times, and priority one is something happening right now, you know, so
like
priority one
dog and stuff like that,
something
or
to
just
that
something
effect,
to that
you know,
effect.
And so, you know, for priority ones, we were about an hour, you know, in response times.
Okay.
And so,
wow.
You know, in the last year, we've put so many different initiatives in place. And I think that the great thing is that we've eliminated the vacancy completely. So as a matter of fact, as of this Saturday, we are our last officer. So we are at 100%.
You're at 100%. And that's amazing, because I remember when you guys were constantly advertising for officers, which, by the way, not a bad job at all. I mean, you're working for the city, you got all kinds of benefits, and I mean, I thought it sounded good when I read the write-up. So, but you no longer need that right now.
Right. I mean, it's a fantastic place to work. And so we're at 100%.
Cool.
The 2,300 call backlog has been completely eliminated. Mm-hmm. So as we close out fiscal year 19 and enter into fiscal year 20, to the best of my knowledge, this will be the first time ever in the history of animal welfare that we will be dealing with calls on the day that they come in.
Well,
you know, and our priority one response times, as I said, we're at an hour, and now we're down to 20 minutes.
Thank goodness. Well, now it's really making a difference. Now it's really active in the community and able to respond, you know, in the needed time.
Absolutely.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
How did you do that?
Well, you know, I think part of it is just, you know, the first thing that we did is kind of change our hiring philosophy.
Oh.
And so we really just kind of, we looked at what the requirements were there, and they were really restrictive. So we removed some of those requirements to have like professional, you know, animal handling experience, because in certain cases you might have someone who works at a pet store that sells fish, and then they qualify, but someone else who, you know, potentially worked on a farm or something like that doesn't.
Or had just a lot of dogs or a lot of cats or just this natural kind of experience with them.
Exactly.
Right. Well, I'm glad that changed.
Yeah. And so we opened that up, and really what we did, we just took the direction of saying we're hiring for attitude and aptitude.
Nice.
You know, we're just looking for good people, because really, I don't care what job you have outside the shelter. Once you get into the shelter, there's really nothing that prepares you for the things that you experience inside, you know, a community shelter. And so we just hired for really good people, got them out there. We changed our process on how we deal with certain calls, you know, and it's just been, I think, just a whole philosophy change within the field that's really helped us get to this point.
What would you recommend to people who are thinking about volunteering at the animal shelter? Because it's an emotional place, you know, and you kind of feel that, whether you be a sensitive person or not, and you see these animals, and you see the, you know, one cage, it's fine. You know, that dog is just jumping around, whatever. Next cage over, or kennel over, you know, not so great. And I'm sorry I used the word cage. I think it's kennels, you know, and so I'm sorry.
We know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying? But that's a lot to take for some people.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, unfortunately, I think from where we sit, you know, we need as many volunteers as we can, because, mm-hmm. you know, when you look at the statistics of the shelter, you know, 50% of the euthanasia that takes place is due to behavior. Yeah. And so I think, you know, probably one of the more heartbreaking thing that things that happens in the shelter is that, you know, you see an animal that comes in that's, you know, fairly healthy in its mental capacity, and then it deteriorates over time. And that's really where our wonderful, wonderful volunteers come in, and they provide enrichment and love and, you know, interaction to those animals to help them maintain that healthy capacity. And so in terms of recommending, you know, someone who wants to volunteer, I would say absolutely, you know, it's in my mind the best place to volunteer, because it's one of the most fulfilling things to see an animal that maybe comes in struggling and kind of nurse them back to getting into a healthy forever home. It's the best thing ever.
Doctor, what goes on with these animals that they feel that way? Why is it that, you know, some dogs will do okay if you kennel them when you're away from home, and then you go back and it's like nothing at all. And then some of these animals, when they go into the shelter, it's very, very different. Right. Do we know why?
You know, the only thing I can liken it to is people. You know, there are some people who do just fine sitting in an office and, you know, and maybe not having an outdoor capability all the time. And then you have others who, like me, you put me in an office and I can't go outside and do things, I'm going to go crazy in about 2 hours. I think that there are a lot of dogs who really their experience in life has allowed them to be outside and to experience a lot of different things. And so if they're sheltered into a small kennel, their mind is just not prepared for that. Mm-hmm. And there are certain breeds that really need activity and challenges and mental stimulation, or else they start to deteriorate. Uh-huh. And unfortunately, a shelter environment is tough on these animals because it's loud, it's a small area that they have to stay in, and it's really not what they're used to.
Yeah.
And so we want to give them an opportunity, even while they're in the shelter, to still have some normalcy. And that's what volunteers bring, and that's what our staff also works to do, is to give these animals the enrichment and the mental stimulation and the love they need to keep them at a good mental state so they don't deteriorate.
Well, I mean, I guess it's a lot of anxiety, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we'd all feel that. Yeah. Danny, like, what kind of training goes into being a volunteer?
You know, really, we've kind of changed our onboarding process. It used to be like, you know, we would hold it every, like, once a month or even sometimes every quarter, this, like, an 8-hour PowerPoint, you know, presentation, which is not the best way, because we were only retaining about 15% of the volunteers. So we've changed that now, and we've kind of turned it into like a series of videos that you can go through online.
Oh, cool.
And then, you know, in terms of our overall volunteer program, we've completely revamped it. So, you know, we've implemented, you know, job descriptions. We were kind of working off of shared visions and whatnot. And we kind of took the approach with onboarding volunteers that really what we want to do is we want to get a leash in people's hands, or a kitten or a cat in people's hands, as quickly as possible.
Sure.
You know, rather than taking them through 10 hours of presentation or something to that effect. And so the volunteers that are there are more experienced volunteers, are team leads. And so a lot of the training is OJT. You know, working with a team lead, you know, going through a series of videos, working with a team lead and actually getting out there and working, you know, starting off with the very safe dogs. And, you know, eventually over time, you can graduate to be able to work with some of the more challenging animals there.
And that's got to be rewarding for some people out there that would like to learn how to work with animals and also approach animals that are in different states of emotional well-being, I guess is how you could say it, because sometimes this brings out, you know, that anxiety, fear. Is the big thing, one of the big things that I bet you guys work with a lot.
Yes.
How do you you partner with PetSmart Charities, right?
We do. So we actually opened the Everyday Adoption Center. I think it's coming up on its 1-year anniversary.
Oh, very cool.
The Everyday Adoption Center. And I think looking at this fiscal year, we're on track to do about 1,000 adoptions out of the Everyday Adoption Center. So it's been a huge success. And I think one of the best, you know, storylines related to the Everyday Adoption Center is that, you know, I think time after time or story after story, we've seen dogs that have been in kennel for 6, 7, 8 months, and they'll go to the Everyday Adoption Center and we'll see them get a forever home in 3 or 4 days.
How nice.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that's just the environment that the people get to see them in?
I do. I mean, you know, PetSmart is a place where, you know, typically you're going to find really responsible pet owners coming through there anyway, and then you present them with some animals. They have about 1,500 person a day foot traffic. So, you know, it's really an ideal environment for people to kind of pull at their heartstrings and get them, you know, and get them to adopt her.
Are you guys still in the mall?
We are still in the mall. We still have Lucky Paws. Yes.
Yeah, Lucky Paws over there. Mm-hmm. I always see their videos. You know, it's just a lot of fun. Every once in a while when the mall shuts down, that place goes wild.
Yeah. That's gone wild, yes.
Well, it looks like a lot of fun. Do you need volunteers at either one of those locations?
Yeah, we need, we're in continuous need of volunteers at all of those locations. And so, yeah, absolutely at Lucky Paws. At our Everyday Adoption Center, we've got the East Shelter at Wyoming and Lomas and the West Shelter that's out west of 98th Street on Central.
Now, the East Shelter is where the clinic is that we were talking about earlier, right?
Well, actually, our isolation facility is at the West Side Shelter.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
We actually
have
clinics at both locations.
Both locations, okay.
But we found this special little space that we dedicated to these kitties over at the West Side.
Is that where they're getting the baths and that sort of stuff?
That's
so we'll need the volunteers that want to do the bathing and the removal and kind of the care of that, of the clinic and the cats in that clinic to be able to go to the West Side.
To the West Side, yes. And we do provide them with training. You know, it might sound a little intimidating if you've never bathed the cat, but we have, actually, like I said, we've got great volunteers already on board who help with that training as well. They're leads, just like Danny was explaining. And we give lots of information. And if there's questions about ringworm itself or anything like that, we're happy to answer those questions. And we also provide protective clothing. So that if someone's in there handling and bathing kitties, they don't have to worry about it getting on their clothes or on their hands or anything like that. So we do have quite the little training set up and quite the facility set up for folks.
You are ready to go.
We're ready to rock and roll.
Well, I mean, you're a medical professional. And it's really true, no? Seriously,
yes.
Because veterinarian medicine, that is science all of its own. It takes...
Yes.
You know, longer to become a veterinarian than it does to become a people doctor.
In some cases, or at least just as long. It takes a while. And the hard part about veterinary medicine is there are so many species to learn about. I always envy human doctors because they get to learn about
one.
So, I just think, wow.
Do you ever want to walk into like a human doctor's conference room and just be like, you got one job.
You got one.
Yeah.
No, all respect to them. You know what I love is my patients can't yell at me, really. You know.
Oh, and, but I bet they do.
Well, they do. They do. But I can't understand the cuss words. Whereas human doctors could, right?
Yes.
They have to deal with very angry people. Right. So maybe I'm blessed in that manner. I don't have to listen to that. So we'll call it even.
Is there any sort of communication skills that you've learned over the years that you could just kind of hint around or pass out on the radio about, you know, just like some people can really communicate, like, you know, when you have your own animal, you know what the looks are all about and you know what the tail and all that, you know what the sitting over here is, you know, you just figure it out. But are there things that we could all kind of pick up on and recognize when we see animals as sort of just, you know, communication from them that is kind of generalized?
There are some things that I think kind of go across the board. And I think we all sort of recognize the happy wagging tail dog. And, you know, and the harder ones to read for folks, I think, are cats.
Yes.
But I think one of the most important skills you can learn when handling animals regularly is to keep your energy calm and welcoming and not be loud and not be, you know, not be like me on the radio right now. Not have a lot of, you know, really high-pitched voices. But having a very calm energy and a very gentle energy goes a long way.
Uh-huh.
And not forcing things. That's one thing you learn as a veterinarian is even animals have a limit. And if they're getting very tense and giving you that hard stare, back away and give them their space.
Give them their space.
Because they're trying to tell you, please give me a moment. Please give me a moment. And, you know, and it's important to respect that. I think across the board, whether we're dealing with people or animals, we all know that tense look and that hard stare means I'm not comfortable with this.
Yeah. We deal with that with Mila. If there's three things that she needs to talk to the vet about, we'll go through one and two and make an appointment for
the third.
<That's>
we'll
see you later. Yeah. I mean, do you have to then calm yourself? Do you sort of put yourself in a meditative state before you go
to
work?
It almost is. You do. You have to. When you're dealing with animals, and especially animals who are fearful or anxious, you really have to separate your own stress and stay very calm and try and keep that energy very calm and welcoming because they're already under a lot of stress. And that's a good thing for volunteers to remember or any staff member is we've got to separate our stress from what's going on with that animal and stay calm.
I guess it could be good just people skills there too, just life skills. If you could learn how to calm yourself down. I mean, so many times we find ourselves, you know, upset about one thing, but you have a job to do.
That's
you know,
right.
You got somewhere to be,
and
you can't let it control you.
That's right.
So maybe volunteering with animals and learning how to recognize your own energy and control your own energy around animals could help you in your own life with other things. Do you guys feel that way?
Well said. Yeah, I think that's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you find yourself doing that each day when you're at the office, just kind of trying to put yourself in a good mood because these animals are picking up on what you're feeling?
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously a lot of us have office animals that, you know, that we keep in our offices. And you know, you try to keep yourself calm for them, but at the same time, they're helping you because, you know, you can be in a stressful moment and then you have, you know, in my case, a dog that will come up and put its head in your lap and you're kind of like, it just melts you down and it, you know, kind of brings you back down to reality. And so, you know, on that note, if I may, you know, we were talking about accomplishments in the shelter, and I think you know, this is like the perfect conversation for that, because I think one of the biggest accomplishments that we've had over the last year in the shelter is really just a change in culture, and just exactly that. You know, I think, you know, walking into it, I mean, within the first few minutes of my very first meeting, it was very obvious that there was like kind of like this culture of fear and like a CYA type of, you know, type of atmosphere. And I think that has kind of been one of the enabling factors for so many people. And ultimately, it's kind of the same management team that was there, you know, before that there is now. But I think the culture has just changed. Yeah. And I think just that overall calmness, that overall demeanor within the shelter, I think people feel very safe to bring up issues and know that there's not going to be, you know, an emotional reaction or anything. And that anything that comes up, we try to solve it together. And so, you know, over the last year, I've seen the communication between divisions and sections. And honestly, I feel like we really have people rowing the boat in the same direction at this point, and everyone's kind of working towards, you know, a shared interest and common goals and mm-hmm. you know, just a shared definition of success.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that is very, very important, and good leadership there is always very important, and change, they always say, comes from the bottom. And so when the folks that are in there and they're doing the work, when they feel like they have an open door and that they can come talk to you and just not fear creating a bunch of drama by doing so, that can definitely change the entire place, right?
Absolutely.
I'm glad to hear that, because as a community, you know, we were all watching the news and stuff, and we were aware that there was a little bit of drama, but you know how things go. And then that was a year ago that you got in there and started working on this, and we haven't heard much, you know, since then. But I guess that's a good thing, because when you don't hear, you know,
no news is good news.
Yeah. No news is good news. Right. But I had forgotten that you guys do that with the animals that are for adoption, because when I used to volunteer and I'd go see Desiree all the time, and she'd have, you know, this dog and that dog, and they're all for adoption because she's, you know, helping them out, and they're, you know, they're your office animals. And how nice. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Best office perk, or best work perk, is you get to love cats and love dogs while you're there.
Get to have them come in.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're getting kind of close to the end. Was there anything that you wanted that we haven't touched on today?
You know, I think maybe just a little bit of bragging on the shelter and the staff that are there. You know, this fiscal year, our, you know, save rate is on track to be the highest save rate in the history of the Animal Welfare Department.
Oh, wow.
And so
that's amazing.
It really is. And so I think, you know, we've been working with national organizations mm-hmm. like Best Friends and, you know, working with their implementation team. And you know, I am just so excited and so proud of what's been accomplished over the last year at the shelter. And, you know, I think if we can maintain this momentum, I don't want to come out too early, but I just think that we have an opportunity to be, you know, a marquee shelter and one of the more progressive shelters in the nation.
Well, I would love to see that for our community and for our animals in our community, because they really do give so much. And, you know, we're a community that I think responds well to these kind of things, you know, as best we can. A lot of people, I mean, we do have our issues, of course, but I do see that where this community is really benefited positively by having good animal shelters and good working relations. We've talked about it before in the times when you've been on, you know, with the different programs about just keeping the animals in the community healthy, and it keeps the community healthy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, one more time with the contact information.
Absolutely. So if you would love to come help us out and learn a little more about our ringworm facility and saving kitten lives, you can contact us through 311, specifically asking to be routed to the clinic to volunteer.
Okay.
You can call the clinic at 764-1151, or you can email our clinic manager at kehlerkkaler@cabq.gov.
That's the voice you use with the animals, isn't it?
It is. It's way different from my regular voice, right? The calm voice, Donna.
The calm voice. Well, we're glad that you guys came in today and talked to us. And thank you so much.
Thank you
for all that you do for the animals.
Thank you
for listening to us on Community Talk. We'll see you again next weekend.